At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again, as she always does on a Wednesday. Joanna, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. Can you ask Joanna how to deal with a 13-year-old who was self-harming, cutting arms with a knife? He threatened to repeat the behaviour if he does not get his own way, such as wanting to keep his phone all night. He hasn't required medical treatment for injury, but I'm afraid it will escalate. We've hidden the knives, but he finds other sharp items. What do we do?
Oh my goodness. I just think not much else will trigger the kind of panic and anxiety in a parent that discovering your teen or your child has been self-injuring or self-harming does. I just think it's one of those things that really gets us as parents going, oh my goodness, that my child who I love and adore and do everything to protect is hurting themselves. It's so hard to deal with and so anxiety provoking. Unfortunately, it is actually quite common in this age group. And I don't say that to minimize it because it is very serious. The causes, the motivations can vary widely. So the kind of why is he doing it? That would take a lot more questions from me before answers. Mm. But what I would say, even if you're clearly saying here, look, these were superficial cuts, they were still self-harming behavior. And while he hasn't required medical treatment, I would strongly assert that he does require some psychological support and help. And to even break that cycle of self-harm, even to break this kind of cause and effect piece of, if you don't give me what I want, then I'm going to do this. I mean, there are so many things kids can do if they're not pleased with a parental decision, or I don't like that you won't let me do what I want to do. This is a very particular type of behavior. So to break that self-harm cycle, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to your GP, seek a referral to CAMHS, you know, child and adolescent mental health services, and or seek some private support if the wait lists are too long. I would still advise you to do that though. And if anyone else is listening and they have a concern about their teenager's mental health or ability to keep themselves safe, you know, you could also reach out to Pieta House as well and services like that, who can also provide some crisis counselling while you're waiting for maybe longer term intervention to kick in as well. And just, you know, how we define this, Sean, is really, you know, self-harm is basically anyone who deliberately hurts themselves as a way of coping with painful or really strong or overwhelming feelings. It's typically a sign of deep distress. Mm. So that's why I would say that even if the cuts haven't been medically worrying or very worrying, the behavior itself is, because it's indicative of deep distress and an inability to cope with strong feelings or overwhelming feelings. It basically takes, from a parental point of view, support, time, patience, acceptance, empathy. It takes all of that. So in order to provide that, I would also encourage as parents to reach out to your own network, be that informal supports like friends or family members, or more formal supports, again, via your GP and mental health services as well. Because, you know, it takes a huge kind of collaborative effort for someone to move from self-harming to self-supporting strategies. It's not an easy pattern to break. Mm. So I just think that, you know, it can also be helpful to bear in mind that just as it's scary for you as a parent, it's also really scary for your teenager. You know, this is not like, oh, I know what I'll do, I'll do this. This is about something else. So they may be holding some blend of, you know, fear, shame, guilt, regret, even deep sadness of their own. So be there to listen and to think and feel it through, you know, together, but very much get help with this. Say to your teenager that this is serious and you take it seriously and you are going to be reaching out for help. Yeah. And no matter what he's threatening here, the only caveat I'd add is you don't want to reinforce a belief that actually I can do this as a way of controlling you. Because, you know, look, control does serve a function here as well in this type of behavior. It's not the primary thing, but it can. So when he says, I'll do it if you don't give me something, you don't give in. You cannot give in. You can do a lot of, I really don't want you to do it. It really worries me that you would say that. And that's where your mind would go. And that's why we're going to get some help. but I'm not giving you the thing you're demanding from me, because otherwise that's going to escalate and reinforce that this is an effective way of getting what I want. And you don't want that behavior to get any more entrenched than it is.
Yes. This, and this is not to minimize it at all, but can this be, and we don't know about the circumstances of this 13-year-old, can this be a learned behavior to the extent that, you know, kids, when they're, especially when they're in their teenage years, they feel all sorts of strong feelings, but they see, oh, other people are coping with this by self-harming, and they're kind of copying that to an extent. That isn't, and I'm not trying to minimize the seriousness of that.
I mean, the starting point of it can be any number of reasons. It can be that I'm aware of someone else, or I've seen it on a TV show, or I'm aware of a friend doing it. But it still has to occur to me in a time of distress that that is the thing to do. So I still have to be exploring, well, is that going to help me? If I think it helps them, it might help me. So, you know, I would keep a curious, open mind about the causes, but I would still react to the fact that he's done it. And, you know, this, it opens with, you know, he's self-harming. You know, not that he has self-harmed once, but yes, that he is self-harming. And I suppose that's the piece for me that just jars with me, that this is something he's done. And actually, he's telling you, I will do this again. So I think even if he doesn't mean to cause himself significant harm in doing it, the risk is always there that he will.
Yeah, yeah. It's a worrying period for the parents as well, because there'll be, as you say, because there'll be a time lag inevitably of God knows how long before they can maybe get some intervention here.
I that's the piece. And, you know, I'm just, as I said, you know, it's quite common. I'm also aware anecdotally myself within my own practice of a huge rise in inquiries from parents about self-harm and arising around this topic. So I know this is something. And of course, we know our teens' mental health is under immense pressure and anxiety is escalating. We know all of this, and there is also a correlation in a rise in self-harming behavior. So I really feel for families who are struggling to get the specific help they need. But I still think reach out quickly and get onto one of those waiting lists, and stress how urgent and important this is, because our public services do respond to crisis intervention as well.
Now, next question. I suppose another example of stress. My son has just turned 3 and he's become incredibly fearful. If we pass people on the street, he'll practically socially distance himself into oncoming traffic. In the playground, he's so upset that there are kids everywhere. He won't go on anything and just stands hugging my leg and looking really sad. Today we went to the sea and his sister was paddling and he sat on my knee saying he was so worried about her and kept asking her to get out and when could we go home. He's perfect at home, doing brilliant at everything and okay around our neighbor's kids, but once he's out in the world he seems terrified by anything new. He's not in play school yet, as our local one doesn't take them until 3 years of age, and with all the lockdown he's just been so cut off from things. Any suggestions to help him enjoy life outside the four walls of the house would be greatly appreciated.
Ah, the poor little thing. I just think it's so sad, isn't it? You know, that you, children this age are typically so excited about the world and so curious and trying to say hello to everybody and introduce themselves and, you know, get in there and get involved. And actually this last year we have, and rightly so and with good cause, we've been teaching them to be cautious, to hold back, to keep in, step away, not to be interacting. And of course they followed our cues and our leads and they have done just that. And now we're seeing a cohort of very young children who are cautious and, as this letter says, even fearful about that typical interaction. So I think it is quite a common response to this pandemic year, if you like. And because he's just turned 3, you know, it's not like you can sit down and have a, you know, conversation around, well, listen now, wait till I explain how this goes and actually this is going to move this way and here's what you are and aren't allowed, because he's so young and cause and effect thinking isn't quite there yet. But they have internalized germs, danger, caution. So I think your best tool here is a playful response. It's really about looking at distraction and redirection. And so when you're going out for your walks, I know everybody is collectively sick of walks at this stage, so trying to make them interesting, not just for our children, but for us. But take just even an A4 page is fine and break it into 6 boxes and put little things to do. You know, when you see a blue car wave, when you see a red car jump up and down, when you see a bicycle do jumping jacks, little things, you know, find a green leaf, find a brown leaf, find a pink flower, listen for three sounds. What are the three sounds? And you can write it down. So it's like taking a little scavenger hunt on your walk. And what you're doing is you're increasing that stimulation and engagement. So his focus is on that and what he's doing. And it's minimizing or at least distracting him from the awareness of other people and what's going on and what should I be avoiding and fearful of. But it's increasing the fun and interactive aspect of it. You could also suggest it when you're out walking, especially if he's getting a bit anxious and he's pulling in or gripping your hand very tightly and you know those cues from him, that you could just suggest in that moment pausing. Just say, red light, everybody pauses, close your eyes and listen to the sounds around you and tell each other what you heard. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then again, you're just doing a sensory engagement, but you're breaking that. He's closing his eyes and you're bringing him down out of that busy, as agitated little brain and anchoring him into those now moments in his body. And then I think as well at home in general, not to him, not for him or directly about him, but in general, talk openly about how things are getting better bit by bit. I know everybody will have their take on that, but for a young child's benefit, that there's lots of people, lots more people getting vaccinated, you know, school is going to be opening up, he's going to be starting his preschool, I imagine September at this stage, but you know that these things are exciting, walk by that or drive by that depending on your area and point it out in an excited way and just try to gradually reframe the narrative to what is happening in a more positive way around him. And this will take time. That's the only thing I'd say. Increase the playfulness, because that is his language at this age. This is very much how he will make sense of all of these scary things in the world around us. But be aware that there is context to his fear. You know, we've had to be fearful and cautious because there has been cause to be so. And it's going to take time to transition out of that. So I think lots and lots of play, redirection and distraction is the best thing, and just give it some time.
Yeah, lots and lots of patience. My friend's son lives with me during the school semesters as his parents work away. He will not wash his hands, at the very least in the pandemic. I feel very uncomfortable asking him, telling him and having to remind him to do so. I've asked his mother more than four times to talk to him, and each time her reply is quite patronising. And she says, oh, he must uphold the highest standards of his host. My gut is they don't enforce him to be hygienic. And he has told me his parents have friends over for dinner, etc., to their home, so clearly they're ignoring the restrictions anyway. I don't know what to do, as he's not my child, but he's in my house and his parents aren't doing anything.
Oh, this is so complicated. And this actually may be a very rare example where I would advocate my house, my rules as an approach. Mm. Generally, I'd be like, let's work collaboratively. Let's bring everyone with us. Let's do this together. But this, I don't know how old this boy is either. You know, and I suppose when I'm listening, I'm inferring, is he secondary school or is it third level college study? You know, because he's living.
It's not clear. Yeah.
It's, you know, and that would make a difference. You know, either way, I'm making an assumption it's not a primary school age child, and therefore it is a young adult or an actual adult who can know better. Okay, there's nothing in here to tell me that developmentally there's any other variable that they cannot grasp this. So if you have spoken directly to the young person in question, you've spoken directly to their parents, I think it's about sitting back down again and actually saying, I didn't imagine I'd have to sit down with you again, but this isn't a passing comment of could you wash your hands, but you actually say, I need to talk to you at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, or whatever it is you make a time. Sit with him and structure the conversation, and I would have his parents attend that call on video call. OK, I'd have everybody there and just be really clear about expectations for everybody in your home. These aren't your expectations of him. These are your expectations of everybody who lives in your home, and that you are just following public health guidelines. And he cannot be an exception to that. In order to live in your home, this is your minimum expectation, and that you really don't believe, because you're not, by the way, asking a whole lot here. We're talking about basic hygiene, and particularly as you flag in the pandemic. I think you need to flag clearly, though, that this is becoming a problem. It's not just a concern you have. It's not something you'd like. This is now becoming a problem because you have flagged it and it hasn't been adhered to. And while you are committed to finding a solution, because it's basic, just wash your hands, you actually may have to review the arrangement if not. And I think you have to mark that. Now, the only thing is, again, I don't want to make an assumption here. Maybe you're not in a position to review the arrangement. Maybe this is something that needs to happen. I don't know enough, but I think if that is the case, you actually have to ask that this is about mutual respect. This is about respect, and that anyone who lives in your home really has to be respectful. But I think that has to happen not in a casual, you ask him and you tell his mother to tell him, actually bringing everyone to the one table at the one time. You can also look, it depends on, again, the age group, but you could provide formal information that this isn't just you overreacting. Here's some, you know, state paraphernalia about hand washing, hygiene and COVID and what everyone's being asked for. You can have personal sanitizer bottles lying around. You can hand him a personal sanitizer pouch. You can model doing it, of course, that you're all doing it. It's not just him. And it's about explaining and framing it that you want everybody to be safe. It's a safeguarding. You're not nagging. You're not anything else. However, I imagine this person has done all of those things. I'm only saying them in terms of their practical things to do. I think if you've got somebody who just minimizes all of this, and you're linking this to maybe his parents minimize it as well, and maybe they don't take on board the seriousness. And there you have a classic example of a child or young adult mirroring what their parents do and following their cues and examples. You have to redirect that to following your cues and examples because he's living with you. So I actually think this one is a my house, my rules, very serious conversation. But again, I'm making assumptions about the age of the young person in question.
Yeah. At the same, it strikes me that no matter what age this young person is, if he's a teenager or maybe a bit older than that, it's his parents or his mother, at least, who doesn't seem to have any respect for the person who wrote in to us. Because most parents would be mortified if they were contacted in that way.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that's why I think the parents really need to be brought in on this in an active way, that this isn't just you saying, please wash your hands. This is actually a minimum expectation for living in your family. So I think even if they're rolling their eyes and saying, oh, you're overreacting, if it still affects a change that they go, just do it so that this isn't an issue. And he does it, then that's the end game. But I suppose there is a bigger issue about the communication between you and your friend in terms of you're clearly you have a close relationship. This is a very generous arrangement, you know, and you're clearly helping out and doing a big favor. It's not a whole lot to ask in return.
No, absolutely not. A few texts relating to some of the questions that Joanna was already dealing with. The first one's about a 13-year-old who is self-harming. One texter says, I worry that our teenagers are being forgotten during this crisis. Is it any wonder they're resorting to these awful measures when they're locked up at home with their parents and able to grow and interact with their peers, play sport to expend their pent-up energies and stresses? These in positions of power in our health services need to take heed. Says one texter, but yeah, well, it's
I share the concern there, you know, and I do hope that we're making proactive provision to support young people in transitioning, hopefully back to school next week.
And the we did have a question as well about a 3-year-old who is fearful. Another texter says, my 2-year-old is having a similar fearful side effect, but with people. Everyone that is not her father and I seems so scary to her. I'm hoping once the world opens up again, she can play with cousins, etc., and that it will right itself. Well, you know, presumably it will.
Yeah, generally speaking, it really will. And I'm not minimizing the impact or effect. Some children will definitely need additional support because their reaction will be over and above. But generally speaking, most children, particularly this age, they will readjust. They'll need support and there might be some wobbles and just a bit of clinginess and, you know, even mild to moderate levels of separation anxiety. But generally speaking, most of them will readjust in a relatively short period. And there will also be some who need extra help.
And on the subject of the young fellow who won't wash his hands, Marie says, my son has brought his friends into the house in the last year when they could. I made them practically shower themselves in sanitizer before I let them cross the threshold. Joanna's right. Your house, your rules. If you don't like it, don't come into the house. Simple. Says Marie. So we have to take a break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. The next question is kind of the opposite side of this. It's a 2-year-old who can't stop licking everything. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. I see there that in the UK, as you may know, there were some concerns about the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine causing blood clotting. Now, it's still very rare, but it seems to be among a certain age cohort. So apparently in the UK, they're going to offer, they're not going to give the AstraZeneca vaccine to people under 30. They're going to be offered an alternative to that. Anyway, we'll progress with our next question for Joanna. My 2-year-old daughter has an awful habit of licking everything. Yes, food, but also clothes, mine and her siblings' faces and even the ground. I don't know why she's doing it. For example, she would be playing outside and lick the gravel on the ground. When she stands up, she proclaims it's yucky. but will do it again the next day. I tell her not to do this, as she's right, it is yucky, and the only thing she should lick is an ice pop. I don't know if she saw this on TV or one of her siblings, but I needed to stop. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like this age group, I mean, they are just tactile, sensory seeking little beings. They learn about the world. They even learn there is a world outside of them by touch, by all of the senses, a sensory exploration. And yes, licking, oral is definitely one of them. You know, children, especially this age, like they really enjoy new sensory experiences. They're in that sensory stage of play that I'm always, me and my messy play, I'm always saying, you heap that on. And I certainly would with her, just to give her an alternative to what she is doing for this. It's also why when it is so common, like you're saying, why is she doing it? Where did she see it? How do I get it to stop? It's actually really common. You know, and think about it, it's why so much of this age group, you know, finger paints and Play-Dohs and that, why it's flagged as, hey, this is edible, non-toxic and edible, because we know that they put everything into their mouths as a way of exploring the world. So it's also called mouthing. You know, you often hear people talk about children who mouth objects. Now, again, look at, please stay off Google. If you put in stuff like this, it's a hop, skip and a jump to a diagnosis. That is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a toddler who is sensory curious and sensory exploring. This is part of it. It's part of her oral stage of development. In an extreme way, you know, children who do this, or people who do this in an extreme way, a pervasive way, and it's way beyond a developmental window, you might be calling it pica, and it can be, you know, something that you need to pay particular attention to. But at this stage, I would be saying, and if there's nothing else that you're concerned about developmentally in particular, that this is associated more with, you know, even children learning speech. They're working out how their mouth moves, how things feel in there. They're getting a sense of that. Even learning how to eat and manage and explore new textures of food. This is all part and parcel of it. It's just that way of exploring the world. Now, occasionally, and I have seen this, if you have a family pet, like a cat or a dog, some small children do kind of go, I might do that too, and they mimic what the little family pet is doing. But I, you know, if outside of that, it is quite normal. I would offer foods that have a high level of sensory input. So you might be putting out on her little plate or whatever way she's eating a choice of chewy, mushy, crunchy types of textures that she can pick and choose and experience lots of that, because, and also including things that have even quite strong flavors. Even if she doesn't like it, she might try it and go, oh no, I don't like that, but she's getting that strong flavor, because when we do that, the mix of flavors and the variety of textures, it can give a strong input to those proprioception receptors that are in the mouth, and it can feed that sensory seeking need that children have, in a way that she then doesn't go out and lick your driveway, because she's getting the need met somewhere else. Because the risk with this, while I'm saying, oh, it's normal and it's sensory I totally get as a parent, the risk is, what if she licks something she really shouldn't, like something dangerous? And so you do need eyes in the back of your head around this. So you keep doing what you're doing with the no, these are not things to lick, these are things to lick, and give her lots and lots of sensory play just to really top up that sensory seeking need she has in a healthier, more structured way. This should pass, though. This really should be a transient thing. So it's not that you can make it stop, but you can use, because she's two, redirection, distraction, and just glorifying other things that are safer to lick. Make your Play-Doh at home. I mean, if make it. I would be making that, yes. So she can definitely eat it.
I have a four-year-old terrified of the bath. I can't get him into the bath at the moment. I was able to for about a month, but now he's back to this uncontrollable screaming if I try to put him in. It's like he can't control how anxious he is. I've tried all the different bath toys, etc., but nothing works. I can just about get him into the shower, but would love it if I could get him into the bath with his little brother. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, and most of all with this one, try as best you can not to make this a battle, because it will only intensify his level of resistance. Because you're describing, he's not being difficult. He's not saying, you know, I don't want to. It's not a behavioral thing. This is fear. This is emotional. You've identified it correctly. And if you keep saying, but you must, and you force him, that fear will intensify. You know, I suppose in an extreme, Sean, like if someone who's afraid of washing and bathing, we look at it in terms of, you know, allophobia, like it is an actual phobia as well. But it's important at this age, because he's four, to distinguish, you know, what is a phobia from, you know, a normal childhood fear. And they're also known as transient fears. And loads of children have them. This is actually quite a common one. There are many, many others. But you think about it, most infants and toddlers go through phases of, you know, anxiety around strangers, you know, like, oh, I don't know you. They get that kind of stranger reaction, making strange. Or if they're in unfamiliar settings, they can get quite clingy to their parents around new people. And they can even become very distressed when separated from you with separation anxiety. And that would be, they would be quite common. A lot of young children would get that. And then they get a bit older, more independent, and it passes. So, you know, while many children will struggle with fears like this or go through periods of fearing and worrying about things, it actually should pass if it's transient. All right. It's if it's there in a pervasive way for, you know, 6 to 12 months, and it's more often there than it's not, and it's causing a huge problem in lots of areas of his life, then you would look at it in another way. So, as I said, don't make it a battle. You know, because he accepts showers, I'm kind of saying, I'm not sure it's allophobia. It could actually be, I just don't like the sensation of sitting in the water in the bath. So I would pick your battles here. And if he will let you shower him, and don't make a big thing of this. I also think, because you're saying, you know, I can just about get him into the shower. So I'm sensing there might be some battle and emotional charge around that too. But would he allow you to wipe him down? And I just think, get like 4 face cloths, soap up one or two of them, rub that in the first time and dampen the other two. So you're wiping down with the second two. And basically, just from a hygiene point of view, I'm thinking on that level, just so you know he's clean and build up to it. The other thing is, you know, make it fun to get it done. You know, add a bit of soap into a paddling pool if you have one, or, you know, soap everyone up and hose them down with some hose play in the garden. Have them play in the paddling pool. And even if you're just hosing them down, you could also follow that up with a rub with a damp towel and then a soft dry towel. Increase the nurture, you know, make it snow with some powder, or, you know, do some lotion. Oh, you're 4. Here's 4 drops of lotion on each leg, 4 drops of lotion on each arm. Let me rub it in and give you nice deep pressure massage type experience to lower those little stress hormones in his body. I think you could increase the nurture and make it playful. But if he's washing enough and or will let you wipe him from a hygiene point of view, I really would encourage you to not make this a battleground, and just keep it there as an invitation. The brother is in the bath, you know, having a great time and it's fun. Let him watch. Don't force the issue. But would you like to watch your brother being washed? Normalize it and make it appealing to get back in. Don't worry too much about the toys. It's not that it's not entertaining enough for him. It's that he actually doesn't like the sensation of sitting in it. The other thing that could work is you can get that bubble bath that changes color in the water. You know, it looks maybe orange in the bottle, and when you squeeze it in, it turns green in the water. I think they're quite available in supermarkets or whatnot. That can also be quite an interesting one. But I would start with some water play in a bowl, showing him that, and that he can put his hands in up to his elbows. I might also suggest, because of course I'm going to suggest this and make every parent break out in a sweat with the sensory mess, but painting his hands or feet and letting him run up and down a roll of paper with his feet and make footprints, and then he can step into a basin of warm soapy water and wash off his feet. And don't make a big deal about, see, that's the same as a bath. Don't do any teach moments. Just kind of normalize it and reintroduce it gradually. Don't battle it.
Yeah, and at least he's not licking the driveway.
Joanna, there is that.
thanks a million. Once again, Joanna Fortune, there you are, listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.